Stillman and Company, 102.5, 106.3, the game, streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook Live, live from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios today. Ian is here today. Hello, Ian.
What up, what up?
I said this yesterday, that it feels disingenuous. It feels unfair to the Titans that on this program, we spent 4 days bemoaning the team, angry at the team, talking about the coach of the team. You know, we were yelling and screaming and everything else for 4 days last week. And with the Bengals win, it was kind of like, okay, like, yay, yay, good win, on to the Colts. And that just doesn't feel right. It just doesn't feel right to sit here and say, hey, we're going to, you know, hey, good job, Titans. You won 27-3. You lose 27-3. We have a funeral for you. We have a wake for you. We set Shiva for you. We all these things. You win 27-3. And on Tuesday, we're sitting here talking about Anthony Richardson. It's like, what in the world's going on around here? So there is still some stuff to unpack from the Bengals victory on Sunday. And I want to start right there with Jared's Film Room.
You are now entering Jared's Film Room.
Ian, I put it up this morning. I watched all of the offensive snaps. I didn't watch defensive snaps. Don't feel like I need to watch the defensive snaps. I watched all of the offensive snaps, both angles of it, you know, to see how the offense had the performance that they had. And I look at, you know, the Bengals game, and everybody's talking about Joe Burrow. And I think Joe Burrow's a huge part of it, right? Like, how can we fairly judge how your defense played when Joe Burrow is at 30%? But the Titans kicked a field goal on the first drive. They punted on the second drive. They scored a touchdown on the third drive. They scored a touchdown on the fourth drive. And they scored a touchdown on the fifth drive. Then they got the ball to start the second half, and they drove the ball for 10 minutes and 22 seconds and kicked a field goal. And at that point, it was 27-3, and it was over. So everybody can talk about Joe Burrow all they want, and they can talk about Joe Burrow's injury, and they can talk about, well, it's not the same Joe Burrow, and that's true. But what about Cincinnati's defense? And what about that Titans offense? So when I watched the tape, the one thing I looked at was kind of a question I threw out there yesterday, which was, I know the offensive line played better than they played against Cleveland, but I wanted to know why. Was it because Cincinnati's front is not as good as Cleveland's? I think there's probably something to that. Then again, Cincinnati has a pretty good front. Hendrickson is a really good player, took over the game on Monday Night Football last week against the Rams. B.J. Hill and D.J. Rader are good defensive tackles. And Sam Hubbard's a good outside backer on the other side. Like, they got good players on that front. And we spent all week talking about, well, there's no way they can block this front, not the way that they were blocking at Cleveland. So, Ian, what is the first and the most important part of fixing a problem?
Usually admitting the problem.
You have to admit that you have the problem. And that's exactly what the film says Tim Kelly did. Tim Kelly called a whale of a football game on Sunday. And you don't need me to tell you that because you saw the 27 points. But it goes even further than that. He has embraced the offensive line struggles by giving them help. That was what they did. We sat here last week. I asked Vrabel, on Wednesday, are you going to block Andre Dillard one-on-one with Trey Hendrickson? And Vrabel was like, well, you know, I mean, at some point, you're going to have to win them. And I was like, oh, no, 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 you can't do that. But at the same time, Vrabel's not going to get up there and say, no, Jared, we are not going to do that because, you know, our game plan is to double him or our game plan is to chip him or, you know, he's not going to give away the game plan. Because the Titans gave their offensive line help. Every time Tannehill went to throw the ball outside the numbers, whether it was to Westbrook Akine, whether it was to Moore, whether it was to DeAndre, every time he went to throw the ball down the field outside the numbers, the Titans had at least six guys blocking Most of the time, they had seven. They used the extra tight end as essentially a sixth offensive lineman. Sometimes it was Wesco. Sometimes it was Wiley. A couple of times it was Chig. And they did a really good job of using Tajay Spears as a blocker. Spears had some good chips. Okonkwo had a good block on the outside. What they were doing at sometimes is they'd have Okonkwo lined up on Hendrickson. And again, that's because of, you know, the foot speed of Dillard. And then they'd drop Aaron Brewer behind Chig so that it was almost like there were two lines of defense. So anytime Tannehill had to throw a ball outside the numbers, anytime that Tannehill wasn't just 1-2, boom, ball out, which we'll get to that in a second, they used more than five blockers. They looked at their offensive line, and they said, we cannot block the Cincinnati Bengals mano a mano. When they rush four, and you've got five, you can't block them. And they knew it. And the number one step to fixing any problem is to realize that you have the problem. Instead of saying, well, you know what? We're just going to have to suck it up and block them. The Titans said, no, no, no. We're not going to get beat this way. Now, if the Cincinnati secondary is so good that NWI and Chris Burke and Chris Moore and DeAndre, they can't get open, now you've got a bigger problem. But with the play action to bring up the linebackers, and their single high safety the whole time, I mean, it was a brilliant plan. Now, anytime Tannehill threw the ball inside the numbers, think about, you know, kind of those strike routes to Wiley, the one that set up the touchdown. Think about a strike route for a 13-yard gain to Okonkwo. Then there were a couple to Hopkins in there. Anytime they do that, they'd block with five, but it was, you know, the ball was snapped, 1-2, boom, ball out. Every time. Including one time where Tannehill threw the ball to Wiley, and I actually wrote in my notes, I think Tannehill threw the ball to the wrong guy because the Bengals had a safety, and the safety was coming down to Wiley, and if Tannehill had waited a second, he could have thrown the ball over the top for more, but because Tannehill was probably told, hey, man, on these quick routes, these man beaters, it's 1-2, boom, ball out. You cannot sit back in that pocket against that pass rush. Not when we've got five guys blocking. So there were multiple times where they had Wesco as the sixth offensive lineman, where they had Spears helping out, you know, and I mean, Spears played a real role in pass protection. Okonkwo, Wiley, they used them all. The Titans decided they were not going to leave Tannehill back there to get killed, which is amazing given what happened the week before. And see, this seems to be the conundrum with Tim Kelly, which is most people who are smart are usually smart all the time. Like, even if it's not an area of expertise for them, for me, I would say it's probably talk radio. And I don't think that I'm an expert in fixing a sink. But when it comes to having a broken sink, I feel like I take the smart steps of figuring out how to get the sink fixed. When it comes to Tim Kelly, he's drawing up some of these plays that I really am just dropping my mouth and saying, wow, what a great idea. The two times that they've dropped Aaron Brewer, it looks like a center or a guard going to pole, like on a running play, and they dropped Aaron Brewer behind the tackle or the tight end who is standing out there to help and support so that Tannehill could step up and throw a ball outside the numbers. I mean, it was beautiful. And I just kept noting, you know, ball out quick, six into block, gain of 10 for Okonkwo. I mean, they blocked well. Now, I don't want to take anything away from the line or the tight ends or anybody else because they did do their jobs. And that is the most important part here. But Tim Kelly called a whale of a game. When you flip on the tape and you see what the Titans were trying to do, the Titans basically told the Bengals, all right, you've got one of two options. Either you're going to commit guys to stop Derrick Henry, but if you do that, we're going to have man coverage on the outside, or you're going to run those soft zones, and we're going to pick you apart. Or you can let Derrick Henry run the ball up the middle, and he'll score a touchdown every time. And given the fact that the Titans have played Lou Anarumo, and if I'd had more time this morning, I would have watched the playoff game, and I would have watched the game last year. Lou Anarumo has kind of shut down Derrick Henry the last couple of years. My guess is the Bengals walk into these games against the Titans and they say, whatever happens, we're not going to let number 22 beat us. Well, as we saw in the Charger game, when a team is dedicated to stopping the run, what they're going to do is bring one more guy than you can block. Whether that's a safety, a linebacker, whatever it may be, they were so dedicated to keeping the Titans from blowing it open by running the football that everybody was singled up. And so all Tannehill has to know is, hey, can Chris Moore outrun this guy? Can DeAndre Hopkins get himself open against Cam Taylor-Britt? And then Tannehill just put the ball in the perfect spot every time. But the game plan that the Titans came up with was marvelous. And this wasn't just, you know, again, the play calling, which I thought was really good. But the play design, I thought, was fabulous. And I think that it's more, you know, we talk about Tim Kelly. The one thing I really have to attribute this to is Vrabel. Because it involves more than just the play caller or even the play designer, right? Like, think about the tight ends and the usage that they had, where Wesco was essentially a sixth offensive lineman and Josh Wiley played a big role as a blocker and as a pass catcher. Well, that's Tony Dews, the tight ends coach, that has to make sure Josh Wiley is ready for that. And then he's got to be in sync with the offensive line, and so the offensive line coach has to be on the right page. So I got to say that I felt like the Titans' game plan, just looking at the tape, I thought it was fabulous. And it was more the passing game plan than it was the running game plan. I mean, we know what the running game is, right? Block them up, get the backs out there, get the tight ends out there, and then, you know, let Derek and Tajay Spears find the hole and hit it. Well, that's what those zone runs are for anyways. But the passing game, the Titans looked at the Bengals secondary and said, if you don't help your guys, we're going to feel comfortable throwing the ball to DeAndre Hopkins, Nick Westbrook, Akine, and Chris Moore. And then everything behind that was executed and coached perfectly. I mean, the Wiley, Spears, those guys blocking, I thought it was fabulous. Now, I don't think you can do this every week. Like, if you're playing the Saints secondary, you can't do that because your guys can't win those one-on-one matchups against the Marshawn Lattimores of the world. Now, this week, the Colts, their secondary is not very good. I mean, they let Puka Nacua catch the ball for about 9,000 yards on Sunday. So maybe you'll be able to do something similar. Plus, I think the Colts defense kind of sucks. But that's a different discussion for a different day. I'm just looking at this Bengals film, and I got to say, Tim Kelly called a whale of a ball game and had a whale of a scheme to go out there on Sunday for the Titans. 615-737-1025. That's how we're starting today. 615-737-1025. Now, I was a little surprised when I actually, you know, kind of saw these offensive linemen and how they did and who played well and who didn't play well and all that kind of stuff, I actually was stunned. Stunned is, that's probably a little stretch. But I was surprised by something that all of us were scared to death going into this game. We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you want to weigh in. We'll be giving away Preds season opener tickets later today on the program. So be excited about that home season opener here on the program. And tune in to 93.3 Classic Hits tomorrow for MTSU football. The Blue Raiders will kick off at 7 against Jacksonville State. Pre-game begins at 5:30, and coverage is also available on the 93.3 Classic app and 93.3ClassicHits.com.
You saw on film how that offensive line worked. Were you happy with that improvement there?
Yeah, I mean, there were some good finishes. I mean, again, when we took the ball at the end there and were able to run the football and have the clock and run the clock out when they knew we were going to run, I thought that was a good ending to an efficient day on offense. You know, it could go one or two ways, right? Three plays and punt, and they have to go back there and, you know, play defense. Probably, you know, gonna win the football game, but you're gonna have to go and rush and cover them. And you know, we want to end the game, you know, with the football, and we did that. I thought we protected better. Thought there were a few lapses. You know, I thought, you know, they got us on the one third down with the TE with the game over there. Brew trying to probably do a little bit too much. You know, it was kind of working to the left side and, you know, came back over to help. And you know, Dylan was going to work back out and kind of gave up a cheap one there. So as long as we just all do our job, I think winning one-on-one in this league will always be something that 'll be beneficial for us if we can do that in all three phases.
There you go, Vrabel talking about the offensive line. Long story short, they played better. Now, here's what I was stunned by when I actually watched tape. Andre Dillard actually had an okay game. I know Andre Dillard stinks. We all know that. But he actually had a good game. He got smoked inside by Trey Hendrickson once on a run play for Derrick Henry that gained a yard. He got worked on the quick snap by Hendrickson after that Chris Moore catch that Ian and I don't think necessarily was a catch, but the fans get mad every time we say that, but it probably wasn't a catch before halftime on the sidelines. And so the Titans then ran up to the line of scrimmage to run a play, and Dillard probably wasn't really ready to go on that play, and so Tajay Spears got hit in the backfield for like a 5-yard loss. There was one play. I mean, he got called for an eligible man downfield. Tannehill hit Westbrook Akine for a big gain. And he got called, Dillard did, for an eligible man downfield. And I circled it in my notes from the TV copy. And I say, you know, I want to be able to see this once I get access to the film. And when I watched it on the film, I saw him run down the field like 8 yards. It's like he thought it was a running play. I mean, it negated a huge gain. Let me see exactly how big that was on the throw to NWI. 25 yards. Tannehill complete NWI for 25 yards. And I wrote on my thing, good call, but WTF was Dillard doing? What was he doing? It looked like he was running down there. Put the ball to Cincinnati 25. Let's see. I believe that you ended up, you punted. So he killed you on one drive there while the game was kind of over. But outside of that, Dillard had a pretty good game. And I will say this, if Andre Dillard only kills you for one drive in a game, I think we should consider that a win. So Dillard actually had a good game. Brunskill gave up a sack. Brewer got, you know, big boyed once where he got pushed back pretty badly. But the only guy on the offensive line that the Titans have right now who's a problem, or at least was a problem on Sunday, because Dillard still probably is a problem, was Raidens. He's terrible. I mean, folks, I know he's like the feel-good story, like a Disney movie, where they drafted him in the second round with high expectations that he could play tackle, and then they deactivated him his rookie year in the playoffs because he was no good, and then they gifted him the right tackle spot in training camp only for him to lose it because he was terrible, and then he had a couple of games at guard last year, and he was the backup that never could. And then they put him in there for a second, and he tore his ACL, and he worked his way back, and he gets out there in the Charger game, and he's not as bad as Xavier Newman-Johnson, who just lets the other guys run right by him and go hit the quarterback. And so everybody wants to hear good things about Dillon Raidens, but he freaking stinks. I mean, he's awful. He holds on every play. They called it a couple of times. He almost never, you know, socks a guy back. In pass protection, he's going to get Tannehill killed because what the Titans want the tackles to do is push the guys to the outside so Tannehill can step up into the pocket and make a throw, but Raidens can't push anybody back. They push Raidens in, so Tannehill would be stepping up into Raidens. I mean, I watched that Bengals tape, and even though the Titans offense was on fire, I came away from that saying, Lord, please let Peter Skoronski be healthy on Sunday against the Colts. Because Raidens is horrible. You know, again, Dillard, I think we all kind of have our issues when it comes to Dillard. I think we all kind of have our disappointments when it comes to Dillard. But, woo, I tell you, that Radiance out there, he is terrible. And the tape, you know, they always say the eye in the sky doesn't lie. I used to ask Floyd one time, I said, if you get in a discussion, right, in an argument inside the facility, you know, you're senior football advisor for the Patriots, and, you know, Nick Caserio is whatever his title was, and you and Caserio disagree on something before you go to Bill. And you say, no, I think he's good, and you think he's bad. Like, what do you, how do you decide? He goes, oh, there's no arguing in the facility. It's just, go put the tape on. And you watch his Raiders play. Woo. Woo. Now, one thing that I do need to go back and watch is the difference in how they react off the ball at home when they know the cadence as compared to when they're on the road. Because it is clear that they are having some kind of issues in terms of the silent counts and getting the snap off and getting off the ball. Now, maybe it's because the Saints have some good pass rushers and the Browns have some good pass rushers, and the Colts don't really have the kind of defense or the kind of pass rushers that those other teams had. But there's some kind of issue that they've got right there. I don't know exactly what they're supposed to do. But, man, I tell you, that Raiders, he's horrible. The amount of people that were saying, you know, oh, we should give him a game ball for the way he played against the Chargers. Woof. I mean, again, not that this is Charger tape we're talking about, but, woo, he's awful. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Texter says, Aaron Brewer was a bad boy on those pulling plays. I got to be honest with you. I mean, I had a cup. I mean, I don't even think I had anything in my notes where I looked at Aaron Brewer and said, boy, that was a great block by. Oh, no. Tannehill had an incomplete pass to Chris Moore, and I thought that he ended up getting a good block from 55 on that play. But no, I don't. I mean, Aaron Brewer is just a guy. Aaron Brewer is overpaid by about $2.5 million. The Titans should have never given him that contract. They should have, instead of giving him the second-round tender, they should have given him the right of first refusal, knowing that no other team in the league was going to offer Andre or was going to offer Aaron Brewer a contract, because that's how restricted free agency works. And it was a complete rookie mistake by Mike Vrabel. And they overpaid for Aaron Brewer on a team where they went out with their hands to their star safety and said, please, please, please give us some money back, when all they had to do was give Aaron Brewer less money to have Aaron Brewer be the same replacement level player that he is. And I hate to sound like a jerk when I say that, because people get mad at me. They say I'm not giving them enough credit, or I'm not doing this, or whatever it may be, but that's the reality of the NFL. And again, like I said, rookie mistake from Mike Vrabel. And we're going to see those with the Vrabel Carthon as this continues on, you know, some more rookie mistakes. One texter texts into the text line and says, what would you do with Nicholas Petit-Ferrer? Would you play him this week? No, I would not, because Chris Hubbard, I think, is doing a pretty decent job. But you got to give credit to the coaching staff for this one. Vrabel won't give credit to the coaching staff, but I'll give credit to the coaching staff for how they treated the offensive line. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. I've got Tim Kelly through four games. I've got Arthur Smith with Mariota as his quarterback through four games. And I've got Todd Downing through four games. What to make of these stats? We'll get to that coming up next. 615-737-1025 if you want to weigh in. Make your silly underdog picks for your chance to win weekly prizes, and you can play at thegamenashville.com or the 1025 The Game app as we approach the week 6 of the college football season and week 5 of the NFL. Silly Underdog Picks is presented by Volunteer Hose and Gasket.
That was a lot of fun. You know, we were efficient, and then that was opening up some things down the field for us. So whenever you're able to hit on these plays that you've been working on in practice, been thinking about dialing it up, get to open up the playbook a little bit. Timmy did a great job calling the game and having a good feel for when to dial those things up. So, you know, it's a good thing for the Titans when they're able to dial those things up.
Yeah, that's Ryan Tannehill. I'm glad to hear Ryan Tannehill tell us what's good for the Titans. That's Ryan Tannehill talking about, hey, Tim Kelly called a great game on Sunday, which he did. He called a great game. Now, we'll get to Vrabel and Vrabel's lack of praise for the coaching staff. We'll get to that in a second, which just, I mean, ridiculous. But I pulled up the numbers of Tim Kelly Arthur Smith with Mariota for his first four games, and Todd Downing for his first four games. Now, we need to keep in mind that there are a lot of, you know, extenuating circumstances when it comes to totaling these up, right? Like, for instance, I don't know the quality of the defenses that Todd Downing played in his first four games as compared to the quality of the defenses that Tim Kelly played in his first four games. Or Arthur Smith and Todd Downing both had A.J. Brown on their football team in their first four games, and Tim Kelly, I don't know if you guys have noticed this, does not have A.J. Brown. But I was a little surprised. Tim Kelly, 18 points a game, 169 passing yards a game, which is not good enough, and 111 rushing yards per game, 57 first downs. So again, Kelly, 18 points a game, 57 first downs, and again, we'll compare this. Arthur Smith, 22.75 points a game, so basically 23 points a game. So that's better than Tim Kelly's 18. 202 passing yards a game, better than the 169. And remember, this is with Mariota, not Tannehill. And 119 rushing yards a game compared to the 111. And they had 82 first downs compared to Tim Kelly's 57. Todd Downing, meanwhile, had 23.75 points a game, or 24 points a game, 230 yards passing in his first four games, 163 yards rushing per game, and 104 first downs through the first four games. So if we want to just take Arthur Smith out of this, and we just want to say, okay, Todd Downing over here, Tim Kelly over here, through their first four games, Todd Downing's team averages six more points, about double the passing yards from 170 to 230, and from 111 rushing yards to 163, and double the first downs, 57 for Kelly, 104 for Downing. Now, what does that really tell us? Well, it either tells us that there are a lot of extenuating circumstances here that make it completely uncomparable, right? Incomparable. Make it incredibly incomparable, the idea that, you know, hey, you had to play the Cleveland Browns in these first four games, and they may have a top two, top three defense in the NFL, and I don't know the defenses that Todd Downing had to play in those first four games, but maybe they weren't as good. Or that four games is way too small of a sample size to judge an offensive coordinator. Now, the other thing, too, the caliber of players that Tim Kelly had, you know, in the first four games compared to the caliber of players Todd Downing had. I mean, Todd Downing had Roger Saffold and Ben Jones and and A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, and, like, they had more players. They had better players as compared to what the Titans have right here. But it was astounding. For some reason, because I think Tim Kelly is a better offensive coordinator than Todd Downing, for some reason, I thought that either the numbers were going to be incredibly similar or that Tim Kelly's numbers were actually going to be better. The thing that throws a huge wrench into this is the fact that you scored 3 points against Cleveland and you threw for like 85 yards and you ran for 25 yards or something like that. But these games still, they count. So I was a little surprised by that. But again, like I said, maybe it just tells us that four games is probably not a big enough sample size. I think Tim Kelly's doing a good job. But I don't think he's doing a great job yet, because as impressed as I was with his performance against Cincinnati, and he called a great game, and he schemed up a great game, and everything, as impressed as I was on Sunday, I think about how incompetent the play calling was and the offensive scheme going up against the Browns was the week before. Now, there wasn't a single call or scheme that he could have come up with against the Cleveland front on the road that would have produced mass results. And that's why I stick the onus of the bad game plan with Vrabel from the Cleveland game, because this had to be a complementary football type game of, hey, we're going to run the ball and punt it, and the defense has to really win this game for us. And the Titans didn't walk into Cleveland with that approach. The Titans walked into Cleveland with a, we're going to play our game mentality, and it got thrown back in their face. But it's so frustrating to have on one hand a guy call a fabulous game and a guy scheme up a great offense, and the previous week against the Browns, they look totally lost, and they're trying to, you know, run out, they're trying to line Tannehill up in the shotgun with Myles Garrett singled up on Andre Dillard, and they end up not getting any points before the half. And then you flash forward to the next week, and you see the Titans out there on the football field, and they're playing against the Bengals, who have, I mean, not the same defensive front the Browns do, but a pretty good one. And they're doing the opposite. Like, they've got the, every time that they throw, they're trying to throw the ball. Every time they try to throw the ball outside the numbers, they had six offensive linemen because one of the tight ends was acting like an offensive lineman. It is funny to me. And I love Derek with all my heart. I do. He's probably listening right now on his way home. But I said on the pregame show, I'm like, you got to do something. Well, it's easier said than done to help out the tackles, and it's not in this game. In this game, they had help for the tackles, which I'm okay with. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Cedric is up next here on the program. Thank you for waiting. Go ahead, Cedric.
Hey, Jared, I got a question for you, man, as far as ratings go. Do you get credit for ratings if we watch on YouTube? Because sometimes, man, I can't listen during the day, but I go home, man, and I get me a nice cigar, and I'll watch you on YouTube in the evening. So do you get credit for that or no?
Well, I mean, I honestly don't know the specifics of it. I don't think I do, but it's not – I don't want to sit there and say don't worry about it, but don't worry about it. We'll be okay.
All right, man. Well, I was just curious. All right, now, Tim Kelly. As long as Tim Kelly's offenses keep producing 27 points a game at home, bro, I'm good, man. I love the way he goes about calling the games. There's more creativity. It's more fun to watch. You know, he had us right in the game in New Orleans. And, you know, we got to take account. Burks is dropping a lot of balls that A.J. did not drop for the other two guys. So I love Tim Kelly. I love what he's got going on. And listen, man, that bum that we had before, did he have a better left tackle than what my man has right now? Because
sure.
Dillard is getting worked every Sunday, bro, every
Although
Sunday.
Although in Todd Downing's defense, the first four games, Lawan got worked that first Sunday against Chandler Jones, and then Ty Sambrylo played left tackle for that second game against the Seahawks.
Jay, don't let that get in the way of my story, man.
I'm just telling you, like, you know, I mean, as much as we want to see, I mean, I think the big thing with all of this is A.J. Brown. You know what I mean? Like, that's the – thank you for your call, Cedric. I think that's kind of the issue. Like, the big issue here with the – there is an A.J. Brown issue that I've tried to avoid it because I was in favor of the trade when it happened, and I hate being the guy – that is like, how stupid could you be to make that trade? That was such a bad trade. When I was the one who was, you know, I was for it. Joe was vehemently against it when they made the trade. Joe was right. Like, Joe and Buck and everybody else that just thought the Titans were out of their freaking minds, I mean, they were right. And people like me that liked the trade, we were wrong. And I think, you know, where the we were wrong is, I think it's twofold. One, AJ just gets better. I mean, did you see what AJ did on Sunday to the Commanders? I mean, he single-handedly won that game for them.
He had a big game.
He single-handedly won the game. And Burks ain't that dude, man. Like, he's just not. I mean, I know he's got talent, and everybody I talked to connected with the Titans that knows Treylon Burks says he is a stand-up guy, that he is a hard worker, that he dedicates himself to the team, that everything you could want Treylon Burks is, but he's just not AJ. And at this point, you know, the second year, and here he is having a problem catching the football, and again, staying healthy, and he's just not going to be that guy. And so when it comes to, you know, well, this is what Downing did, and this is what this one did, but this is the one, you know, the overarching kind of the missing piece here is that we don't have A.J. Brown. Now, I do believe A.J. got hurt early in Downing's tenure. Now, because A.J., that fourth game, A.J. didn't play. I want to say A.J. got hurt against the Indianapolis Colts in Todd Downing's third game. So these Downing stats may be without, you know, really having that stability at left tackle in Lawan, and maybe without having A.J. Brown. And they still threw for 230 yards a game passing as compared with the 169 passing that they have through the first four games. But again, it's a small sample size. Texter says it's truly one of those cases where stats don't tell the story. Watching the first four Downing games had me screaming, where's the play action? TD asked Downing at his first presser why he dropped play action, and he said they weren't getting the looks that they wanted. I don't remember that when it came to Todd Downing. Texter said, take it at face value. Downing had better numbers. Kelly's at least dialing up big shots. I love that Kelly's got the smaller numbers in comparison because the eye test says otherwise. The offense will play better down the stretch number-wise. Now, Downing did take shots down the field early on. Remember that Seattle game, that second Seattle game, Julio, you know, was kind of the go-to guy, and they hit some shots down the field. And then I want to say they beat the Colts in that third game kind of the same way that the Titans won on Sunday, which was it was a lot of Nick Westbrook-Ikhine and Chester Rogers and those guys that were playing wide receiver as opposed to Julio Jones and A.J. Brown. But my guess is that once the book got out on how Downing was going to use these guys, the league caught up pretty quickly. Because there's no doubt in my mind that Todd Downing did not have a clue when it came to running this offense. One texter says Burks is Corey Davis. I thought the same thing where I, you know, and I like John Robinson. You guys know that. I think John Robinson did a good job. But the idea of, well, I'll just trade AJ and draft the next AJ. It's like, dude, you did use the fifth overall pick on Corey Davis. Like, are you sure? Like, you're that sure that this guy's going to be A.J. Brown? And, I mean, A.J., they put, and I didn't watch the Commanders and Philly until, like, overtime after I was done with the Titans game. But I think A.J. had, like, 60 pounds on the corner that Washington put out there on him. Emmanuel Forbes is 160 pounds and AJ's 225. And AJ just big boyed him the whole game. And so the Titans are, you know, they got to get over the AJ Brown problem. 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. One texter says AJ almost lost the game for Philadelphia because he got called for taunting after his touchdown, which gave Washington better field position. I got to tell you, I was disappointed, not in AJ, in Ron Rivera not going for two at the end of regulation. And his explanation was that the offense was gassed. Well, if the offense is gassed, what is Philadelphia's defense doing right there? It's like, what happened to Riverboat Ron? Terrible. 615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. So Mike Vrabel is hellbent on not giving credit to Tim Kelly. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, 615-737-1025. Be sure to join Robbie, who's in for me, Chris Sanders and D. Mace at Twin Peaks in Madison this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 for the award-winning pregame show. That's right. They'll be breaking down the Week 5 matchup of the Titans and the Colts. And the pregame show, the award-winning pregame show, is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and The Beast Unleashed.
With that, the play call, it seemed like Tim Kelly was in a groove. How do you like the way he layered his calls and
All the credit goes to the players. It does. You know what I mean? We make all this up about play callers. I mean, give them a play, and they go execute it. It's up to the players. They did a great job. That's what I'm saying.
You know, that was Vrabel after the game, right? So how'd you think Tim Kelly did layering his play calls? It's all about the players. It's all about the players. And I'm like, okay, you know, I get it. Vrabel always wants to, you know, I've seen Belichick win the AFC, and they give him that, you know, little AFC trophy, and he's like, yeah, this is about the players. And I've seen Saban when they win the national championship, and Saban's like, this is all about the players, and I'm so proud of the players. And so I get that. I understand. But you can give credit to Tim Kelly where credit is due. And Paul kind of asked a question yesterday around the lines of, you know, hey, well, how much does scheming and play calling help the players be successful? And Vrabel went on this kind of long word salad non-answer and finally clearly just got fed up with it. And again, Vrabel points out that the play calling is really not that important.
I think there's good plays that don't work, and I think there's bad plays that work. I don't know what to tell you. There's, you know, it's just the whole guru mentality. I think that it gets executed, whether you think it's a good call or a bad call, you'll know by the way the players execute it.
Okay, I get it. The whole guru mentality, sometimes it's a little too much for me. But it's not an accident that Kyle Shanahan made Matt Ryan league MVP. And then Kyle Shanahan left, and Matt Ryan went back to being what Matt Ryan was for his entire career. And Kyle's offense with anybody at quarterback ends up in the NFC Championship game. Hell, I could be the quarterback of the 49ers, and we'd end up in the NFC Championship game. And I'm not knocking Purdy when I say this, but like, I bet you Sam Darnold, who is widely regarded as a bust because New York took him third overall, and then they dumped him on Carolina. And I actually thought he played pretty well for Carolina, and I told him that at the Super Bowl this year, that I was like, hey, man, you played your butt off in Carolina. But there was no starting job out there for Sam Darnold. And he goes, if Sam Darnold were the starting quarterback of the San Francisco 49ers, I still think the San Francisco 49ers are one of the three best teams in the NFC with Philadelphia and Dallas because of Shanahan. So why did Vrabel have a giant rod up his butt about, you know, giving Tim Kelly credit? Like, why can't he say Tim did a good job against the Bengals calling the plays? And you'd have to ask Vrabel what his reasoning for that is, but he cannot give Tim Kelly the credit and say, hey, Tim did a great job. Tannehill's saying Tim did a great job. What are we doing? Let's go to Chris, who's up next and has been waiting patiently on A.J. Brown. Thank you for calling. What's up, Chris?
What's up, buddy? How are you?
Good. Go ahead.
First thing I want to say, but besides the AJ thing, is I want to give you some crap for the 53-yard kick by Nick Falk. I know you love it when people talk about it because you talk about it a lot, but, I want to give you a little crap. Is that okay?
That's fine. I said yesterday on the program, he's proven us wrong on this show, and I say us. Ian wasn't against it. He's proven me wrong on this show, and you know, I want to knock on wood that he keeps making those kicks, and hopefully I watch the Colts play the Rams. This Brett Maher, who used to kick for the Cowboys, he's horrible. And it's like, you know, I'm glad I got Nick Folk when I'm watching him kick. All right, get to your AJ point.
Okay, well, get to AJ point. All right. So, do you think AJ would have caught that ball that Tannehill threw on the flea flicker? Do you think he would have caught that ball?
I mean, I think DeAndre should have caught that ball. So I don't, you know, would AJ have caught it? AJ dropped the ball plenty when he was a Titan. And I don't know how much AJ's dropped the ball as an Eagle because I don't watch all of their games. Thank you, Chris. Because I don't watch all of their games. But AJ dropped the ball plenty. There was a Thursday night game against Indianapolis here in 2020, and Ryan Tannehill had a touchdown right into the hands of A.J. Brown, and it went right through in the first quarter. So to act as if, you know, A.J. could do no wrong is not true. But when it comes back to the whole, you know, do you think A.J. would have caught that? I thought DeAndre was supposed to catch that. I mean, I'm sitting there at the game and I see the throw and I see DeAndre kind of stretch out for it and I see it hit the top of his hands and I'm like, DeAndre! Like, that's why they pay you $12 million is to catch that ball. Like, that's supposed to, and then I watched the replay and DeAndre, I don't know what happened, but it's like DeAndre felt the goal line. And I don't know how this new turf feels. I've never been on it before, but maybe you can feel the lines, and I don't know, because it's like DeAndre felt the goal line and then stumbled for like a half millisecond, and that was just enough for him to miss it. And people are like, oh, Tannehill overthrew him. I mean, come on now. Tannehill is throwing to a spot. And, I mean, it was open, and it was there, and I thought DeAndre should have caught the ball. One texter says, I think Vrabel doesn't give Kelly credit when he does well because he does not want to criticize him in front of the media when he calls a poor game. See, now I think there's some truth to that. I think what this is if Vrabel starts to laud his play caller, if he starts to, you know, heap praise on Tim Kelly, then when things go poorly, people are going to go back to the same well of, well, hey, you know, what about Tim Kelly? And then Vrabel will say, you know, oh, well, it's the players who are screwing up. And I don't think that's a position that he wants to be in. And what about, you know, last year with Todd Downing? And, you know, it's crazy. Diana Russini said this. I don't know if she reported this on ESPN and we played the cut or if she wrote it or tweeted it or I don't know. But Diana Russini, who we think, you know, direct line of communique with Vrabel, Diana Russini said that she was shocked when Todd Downing got fired. And I'm like, I think that Vrabel actually thinks that Downing was a good coordinator. As much as we all know that he wasn't, I think that he probably thought that. And so he's not going to want to get into the whole game of, you know, Downing and Kelly and this play caller did that and this one did. My guess is that Vrabel doesn't want to publicly pump up the coaches because he can use that opportunity to publicly pump up the players, and then behind the scenes, he's probably smacking the coaches on the butt the whole time. My guess is that instead of, hey, you know, I've seen bad play calls and good players make good plays, and I've seen good play calls and bad, instead of that, I think Vrabel's sitting there thinking, we owned him on Sunday. But he probably doesn't want to say that. One texter says, John Robinson deserved to get fired for nothing more than letting A.J. go and attempting to replace him with Burks. It must have gotten personal between J-Rob and A.J. and his agent, which is unacceptable. So, I mean, look, everybody was in the loop on the A.J. trade. But when I was on vacation last year when this came out, but A.J. did a podcast with Darren Bates. And A.J. basically said that the Titans weren't offering any real money to AJ, which is along the lines of what he told TD the day after he got traded and TD reported on, which the Titans immediately refuted. Or TD sources immediately refuted, which I assume is the Titans if there's two people in the negotiation and AJ's the one on record. I do believe that Tory Dandy, the agent for AJ Brown, this is just my opinion, just piecing the context clues together, the agent for A.J. Brown, Tory Dandy, I believe gamed the system because he had gotten $20 million for Mike Williams. He had gotten $20 million for Godwin in Tampa Bay, and he was supposed to be the wide receiver agent, and he was trying to get a new deal for Deebo Samuel, and San Francisco wouldn't budge, and so Deebo was requesting a trade, and so I think that I think Tory Dandy lied to AJ and AJ went crazy. And instead of, you know, and the one that got me was because when AJ said something to Darren Bates along the lines of his agent told him to cut off conversations with the Titans, which I think is kind of the way of saying like, hey, if I'm going to lie to you, the last thing I want you to do is I want you to talk to them because then you'll talk to them and you'll be like, well, wait a minute, that's not what my agent told me. But ultimately, John Robinson did have the trump card there of just saying, okay, fine, we're just going to do it our way. And we're just going to tag you. And you will show up for camp. You know, kind of the way that San Francisco ended up doing with Deebo Samuel. But No use in crying over spilt milk. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. I'm ready to make a declaration on behalf of you, the Titan fans. We'll get to that coming up next. Here on Stillman & Company, again, 615-737-1025 is our phone number. And be sure to join us on Thursday, because DraftKings Sports and Social will be the most epic sports watching experience in town, and they are opening downtown on 2nd Avenue this Thursday, and Stillman & Company will be live at DraftKings Sports and Social from 2 to 6. DraftKings Sports and Social features a massive state-of-the-art 33-foot LED screen and their world-famous menus and signature curated cocktails. That's this Thursday, the grand opening of the DraftKings Sports and Social downtown on 2nd Avenue.